my first time here. I used to live in Falcon Heights. And so it's like coming back home. I'm from China, by the way. And I lived in New York for 30 years and been here since 1998. Now, this is the longest place I've ever lived. I've been like a gypsy wandering around the world. I still can't believe I've been living here for so long. But thank you so much for being here, and thanks so much for inviting me to be part of the gang. Gang of four. Actually, three men, one woman, gang of four, right?
It's progress.
All right, the first poem from my new book of poetry, 10,000 Waves. It's called The Hakka Man Farms Rare Earth in South China. And in the name, in the voice of a Hakka farmer, and also mining this rare earth metal. And the Hakka is Mongolia descendant, and they are descendants of Chinggis Khan. And 99% of the world metal earth, rare earth metal supply comes from China, from two places. One is South China, and the other is Mongolia. And so the Mongolia descendants, the Hakka people means the gas people, so they fled their home place and to southern China. And so it's kind of ironic, the two places became the rare earth metal pit for the world. And this is the one of the workers speaking. First of all, it's not rare nor earth, as they call it. The metal lies under our feet, sparkling in the soil we farm. Red, green, yellow, blue, purple, sky of grass, and buffaloes, patches of rice, bamboos, sweet yams. We came here as guests, Hakka, fleeing from angry lords. Year after year, we bent over the earth, feet and hands in the young soil. Our sweat fertilized the fields, children, ancestors' graves. Our stove cooked the fragrance from the sun and moon. Now we dig deep in the mud, our boots rotting in the rainbow sludge. Dig and we dig, holes, pickaxes, guns, explosive acid wash, 10 yuan a sack, this red dirt speckled with blue and yellow. Home, we cry, a small haven painted with green. Now the mountains are lifted, deep crates in the fields, blood and pus in streams and rivers. All because the world wants this earth. Vitamins for iPods, plasma TVs, wind turbines, guided missiles, things that make the world cleaner and more beautiful, as they say. And here we are, in the waist-deep sludge, a sack of mud, a tail of greed, leaching in our stove. Fire licks my wife's slender hands, acid fumes in her lungs, liver, stomach, till she can no longer sip porridge laced with 1,000-year-old egg. In our cooking swags, we exhume dysprosium, neodymium, promethium, all the name of gods, they say. If gods have eyes, would they see us, slaves on this earth that no longer holds us? In the distance, a mushroom of dust, Baas and his Prius, powered by the sludge that chokes my eyes, ears, nose. One rich field, 25 pounds of metal, 10,000 sacks of earth ripped under our feet. We're slipping, our chests soaked in blood, backs broken, digging, pulling, no food or water, our quota still short, The boss will be mad, but no matter. I light a cigarette. Each puff is the last. Tomorrow is gone, like our village. Here and far away, where horses ran wild under the sky, where we, children of Kingdus Khan, return every night in our dream, which is gone too, they say. Mongolia, our origin, now a rare earth pit for the world. Oh, Hakka, Hakka, forever a guest, wandering on this bare earth.
I was in Mexico City, Mexico, in August, and had a chance to see Frida Kahlo's house. Heard so much about La Casa Azul, and so visiting it was it's like a pilgrimage. Years before I had a chance to go there, I wrote a poem about Frida Kahlo, and this is in two parts, Frida 1 and Frida 2. 1. Frida smiles and winks at the camera. Frida, after surrealism, after two abortions, after 1925 streetcar accident and iconic unibrow Aragin sees as blackbird wings, I think, after Diego and machismo in black, yellow, red, tan dress, I am not sick, she says, shot by her lover in color, never wincing as far as I can see, conditioning an image eternal for sainthood, I am not sick. 35 operations, 2 abortions, surrounded by skulls, pentadine, morphine, not sick, says she, broken. 2, Frida, let your hair down. Frida, don't look at me like that. Frida, leave Diego, do not walk, bolt. Frida, won't you steal the masculine hat of the accident you call Diego and bury it behind Casa Azul? Frida in living color. Frida festooned in Mexican reds and blacks and tans, golds, yellows, y rosados y blanco rosas. Frida, why was surrealism a Mexican breakfast while the feet of the wounded table bleed and you paint tendrils on your 1940 image and only the skull smiles? Frida, who let the spider monkey loose to carry on and live carnal dreams alongside deer, turtle doves, parrots, una familia sustituta con el elefante y la paloma, Diego y tú? Dime, Frida, ¿de qué color es la flor en que tus cenizas esparcidas en la selva se convirtieron? Frida, tell me, what is the color of the flower your jungle's scattered ashes became? So that's my Frida poem. And then I'm going to read a few short poems. These are American Sentences. The great beat poet Allen Ginsberg, who I had a chance to meet in 1994 in an interview, he created a form that's sort of a North American version of haiku. So they're called American Sentences. They're 17 syllables, but they just go across on the page. And unlike haiku, they don't need to have the traditions in that form. But like haiku, they're 17 syllables, they're short, and they're imagistic. So these are a few from my practice of writing one a day. From November 15th, 2006, my daughter Rebecca, she's now 23, but this was back in high school. Words Rebecca should not say in debate class. Gangster, Jew, and douchebag. December 17th, 06. Port Townsend bumper sticker says, only you can stop narcissism. January 28th, 07. Jeff, back from Massachusetts, where he avoided the sandwich police. It was in Sandwich, Massachusetts. So maybe that helps to know that part. March 3rd, 07. He comes back from Vegas with a cold. That's not a cold. It's an STD. October 7th, 07. His sticker, University of South Vietnam School of Warfare. December 19th, 07, his t-shirt said, vegetarian is Indian for bad hunter. January 17th, 08. Oh no, some of we starlings aren't going to make it across the river. July 19th, 08. He sings about Jesus, but his calf tattoo is Wile E. Coyote. July 26th, 08. LeConner bumper sticker says, I'm already against the next war. Christmas Day 2008, right across the river in Bryn Mawr, Minneapolis, I propose Christmas morning before she meets my family. Turns out to be very wise. January 5th, 09, dedicated to my wife. Now, keep in mind the date, January 5th of the new year. Would her Thanksgiving stuffing been this hard to flush had we eaten it? And finally, May 15th, 09, she opens my copy, Erotic Poem Translations, An Old Lover's Hair.
Thank you very much for being here. I'm going to be reading from my latest book of poetry called The Precious Surreal Door Opened. I'll read maybe one or two now. First one is called Luckily the Vegetables. I'm going to start with a line from Paul in Yellow Submarine. What's the matter, fellas? Blue meanies. Luckily the vegetables were supermarketed. And after work, I could swim in a crater, valleyed, where I'd learned by being thrown in a year before to the day, milky spring moon water, when my red hair got me promoted to chopping up red and green bell peppers inside of an hour after I'd almost learned to drown. Not exactly an office, the scrap-yarded shell of a submarine converted into a mobile home. At least the job was calming the fire in my eyes. And I had a view of who threw me in the lake of sky instead of the inside of their coffins. My enemies, I found out by watching them through the periscope I'd blown the dust off, were my brothers and my sisters, in the sense that we're all the children of God. I saw that they're webbed in between eyes, all formed bridges across the chasms of each other's religions. Red hair is easier than flames of rage, so I, along with the parents of my shadow, brought out food for the devils. I knew they were bodied in my soul, not just because of Blake, but also that sleeping's when I reach number 9, a stone's roll way. I mean, from another place. The submarine is code for it. Thanks. I'll read one other one. This is called Place is Always the Whole World. Oh, speech goddess, I saw a drug dealer lurking from the corner of a cash register, its tongue stuck out for you, ready to plant your heart with a golden kiss, flash of coin adjacent to where shrinks brains connected to a liquor store. Your legs crossed behind the till, giggling. And with your hand raised from your knee, you sent him scurrying back behind cowboy doors into pornographic shadows. By speech goddess, I mean a certain egotistical, external extreme. Else it's again someone else's mind, muse. Added from vision, here is space for place, standing, sleeping vampire bat wrapped in its own wings, door slatted lines across his chest, marrow for ribs, shelves of puritanical evil sucked down like soda pop, then splattered against the wall of the any face I'd enemied to make sunset clouds candy sweet for a military sky. I'd like to think it was a fair fight, but it's always my own eyes I look into before the projection hits. Anything less than soul isn't here. Thanks.
Good evening, everyone. I'll be reading some of my fables from Thimbles Full of Charity, my fable collection that's actually available on Kindle if you have that. Shameless plug.
Okay. Test in a buck.
I need there, see? Testimonial. Okay, the first one is called Doors. A woman stood outside a house that had two front doors. They were side by side, with one door open and the other closed. It rained. She stood before the closed door and felt every gouge, clip, chip, and dent in the aged, warped wood. The rain matted her hair, soaked through her clothes, and ran down her face. A man who had traveled far from where he began sought shelter from the rain. He stood and watched the woman. "Excuse me," he asked, "is the door stuck?" "No," she answered, "it no longer opens." Then she pointed to the open doorway. "I live there now." "Then why don't you go inside?" "I have to guard this door. So much happened beyond it that is over. So many people passed through it who are now gone. The door is all I have left." She shuddered. "Do you understand?" The man nodded slowly and looked about. "I have nothing left but memories." The woman considered and said, "I also had those." The man smiled. "Then you have more than a closed door." He motioned toward the open doorway. "Please, let's go inside. I haven't any money for lodging, but I will bake bread for our meal." "I have no ingredients for bread." The man took the woman's arm and led her inside. "We'll make do." They searched the cupboards and found the ingredients with which to make bread. He began to prepare what they had found. The woman watched. "You can bake," she said. "That is something you have besides memories." "Yes, you're right. I suppose we each have more than we realize." As the heat in the kitchen increased, the man unbuttoned his shirt. The woman noticed a scar running down the left side of his chest. When he saw she noticed this, he stopped working. Hands bleached with flour, he wiped his brow instead with his forearm and said, "Passage to get this far was steep." She nodded and pulled back her blouse to reveal a similar scar in the same place. "I know." The bread finished, they sat together at the table and ate. The man told her his stories of travel. The woman told him how she built the house. After finishing the meal, the two went into the other room. Wind and rain swirled through the open doorway. The man stood at the hearth, which was dusty from lack of use. "Would you like me to build a fire?" he asked. "All the wood is outside in the rain." "I'll see what I can find." He went to the woodpile and found a few dry pieces buried under larger, wet ones. He returned smiling and held up the pieces for her to see. "These will do." Once he built the fire, the woman brought blankets and the two huddled together by the flames. She reached out and ran her finger down the length of his scar. "Thank you for baking bread. He reached out and ran his finger down the length of her scar. "Thank you for giving me shelter." The woman shuddered, rose from the man's side, and closed the door. Next one, wanted. Although small, to the little boy, the prison was home. The warden made him as comfortable as possible, but it was still a prison, no place for a little boy to live. The warden loved the little boy, but did not want him. Only the prisoner wanted the little boy around. For the prisoner, the small prison was no home. The warden did not make him as comfortable as possible, quite the opposite. Only the little boy made the prisoner comfortable. One day, the prisoner lay on his cot staring at the ceiling, which was the same gray as the walls. The little boy played hopscotch on the shadows cast by the barred window. The prisoner turned and watched the little boy, who smiled. The prisoner sat up and swung his feet around to the cold, bare floor, the same gray as the walls and ceiling. The little boy quit playing. "What will you do when it's time for you to go?" "I don't know." The little boy balanced on a shadow. "Will you go home?" "I don't have one." The little boy kicked at the light. "You could stay here. It's not home." The little boy took the prisoner's hand. "We can pretend,"